Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute, on air and online, this is Intersection.
Hello and welcome to Intersection, where people and ideas meet online and on KBIA. I'm Ryan Famuhlener. Last week, Americans across the country took time to celebrate veterans and their contributions to the nation. Here in Columbia, the festivities included a Veterans Day parade that made its way down 8th Street, ending at the Boone County Courthouse. To mark the occasion, each day since Veterans Day, KBIA has been airing a variety of personal interviews with soldiers during Morning Edition. The series, which was done in partnership with StoryCorps' Military Voices Initiative and the MU Extension Community Arts Project, will continue through Wednesday. Today on Intersection, we'll listen to a few of those interviews and try to get a better understanding of what it's like to be a veteran returning home and about military life in general. Joining me in studio to explain the veteran experience, Eugene O'Loughlin works for the Missouri Veterans Commission as the Veterans Service Supervisor for Boone County. Eugene, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
And Sean Martin is the acting team leader of the Columbia Vet Center. Sean, thanks for being here.
Thank you, too.
And for you and our audience, are you a veteran? What was your experience returning home from deployment? Share your thoughts. Give us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet intersectkbia. So to start, we wanted to go ahead and play one of those audio pieces I mentioned there in the intro. Sean Lee is a former Army infantryman who lives in Columbia. He served in both the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Lee spoke to Daniel Hartman, his friend and fellow veteran, about why he enlisted and about the challenges he faced coming home.
Coming back, you know, there's just no way to talk to people about what you saw. You know, I saw really horrible things in Iraq. I mean, there are things that you can't talk about. How do you describe to someone in the middle of a conversation, well, right now, while you're talking, I'm kind of seeing this dead guy I saw and his face charred off? Or, you know, you can't understand the kind of horror that you feel when you think, I am about to die. I'm about to burn alive. I mean, trying to connect with people when I came home was just hard. My daughter had no idea who I was. I was distanced from my wife, and the only friends that I had were the ones that I'd been overseas with, and they really were the only ones that understood me. So there was a huge distance between me and the rest of society that I could not bridge the gap because I had nothing I could talk about with them, you know. Yeah. Going to Afghanistan, I felt like I was going home. I'm ostracized. I started a letter writing campaign to the soldiers overseas with a very prominent group in my school. And the girls made a rule that said no last names when writing to these soldiers. Okay, no Facebook information, no email information, just your front name. We don't want them to come back and stalk you with the PTSD.
I had no idea that happened.
Yeah. And I went to the president of the group. I said, you know, this is bullshit. You know, you're leaders in this community, and your friends have 1,800 friends on Facebook, but you can't write a simple letter of hi, how you doing, to a soldier.
Yeah.
But you're saying I can only say thank you and not give you my information because I'm afraid you'll come back and stalk me. It just illustrates what a misunderstanding our nation has of the conflict and of the people fighting it, and how we have not adequately explained to the American people what is going on.
That was veteran Sean Lee, who lives in Columbia, speaking to Daniel Hartman about his time in the military. Casey Morrell produced that story for KBIA. A lot to unpack there in that story there. But what are some of the things you both hear from veterans that you're working with, and some of the difficulties they're facing, I guess, socially? We heard a lot about that, trying to interact with people here back home. Eugene?
I think one of the first things that popped out when he was speaking was the fact that it's hard for them to make a connection with the people that are here back home because they can't understand what the soldiers have gone through. And I don't think that that is specific to him. I think most of the soldiers are actually going through something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're in the military, especially when you're in combat, which I was never in combat, but you are taught in the military to place your life into that other person's hands, and they will place their life in your hands. When you get out into the civilian population, there is nothing like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing. You know, you don't have, you know, you don't ever have to have that kind of level of commitment with another person. And that's why I think we see a lot of failed marriages, failed family systems, as well as people that have trouble finding and keeping jobs because they expect, you know, soldiers that are returning are expecting to find that kind of a level of relationship, and it's just not out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, what are some of the things you both work with veterans that are coming back? What are some of the things you can try to do to find, to see when that's going to happen, if that makes sense, to try to figure out what veterans might be at risk at some of these things? Or is it really everyone coming back? Or, you know, I mean, is there a way to pinpoint it aside from them telling you, you know, I've got this, this is a difficult thing happening? Is it going to have to be on the veteran side talking to you, or can you, is there other, what else are you looking for, I guess, as a professional working with somebody like this?
Well, the military, the DOD, Department of Defense, they have what they call a post-deployment health reassessment. And so they do a screening with veterans that come back from combat. And when they do come back from combat, if they screen that they might need help, then they usually get referred to facilities for help and assistance. And so a lot of times we see people from PDHRAs that we go to as well, Yellow Ribbon events, and we'll talk to the veterans and share with the veterans, hey, if they want to use our resources, then by all means, we're there for them. For this vet, Sean Lee, I'm not sure if he used the Veterans Affairs or not, but, you know, the Vet Center, we're a small program of the Veterans Affairs Office, and we have a lot of veterans that have been, you know, that share the same experiences that he shared, and they find camaraderie with their veterans when they go to support groups. And so they find that they can trust and rely on one another, but they do have a lot of veterans share the same experience with social isolation, lack of fitting in, mm-hmm. to put it mildly. And also there's trust issues, sometimes irritability, anger. And so groups, particularly peer counseling groups with veterans who've been in the same shared experience that they've been in, tend to be very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Commonality with all of this information is the fact that it's kind of up to the veteran to reach out for that kind of levels of support. You know, the alternative is in the event something serious goes wrong and the police get involved or something, then, you know, okay, well, now we've got mandated type solutions for it. But unfortunately, the way the system is set up, the veteran has to reach out for it. Mm-hmm. They're given that information. They're given the information about the vet centers, about the fact that there's counseling at the VA, that they should go and see a veteran service officer. But all of that is they have to go and seek the assistance.
Is that difficult to get them to do that? I mean, not that it's your goal to get them to do something they don't want to do, but is that a barrier for some
Without
veterans?
A doubt. I mean, for some veterans, when they're looking at specific benefits such as going back to school, they know what they're doing, they're focused, they want to do them. They want to go ahead and do that. Or if they want to buy a house and they want to use the home loan guarantee. Okay, those are benefits that they're aware of, that they don't have to admit that something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to PTSD or a TBI, a traumatic brain injury, or even any type of disability, they have to say, yeah, there's something wrong and I need help with this. You know, meanwhile, for the past 3 years or 4 years or however long they were actually serving, you know, they were taught that they can't admit any type of weakness, that they cannot admit any type of, you know, problem is going on. They have to just, you know, it's that there. We need to take that hill, and we're going to take that hill no matter what type of mentality.
There's several times we see other vets bring in vets. It's usually a lot of times as veterans come into our facility because a spouse or a boyfriend or girlfriend or another combat buddy says you really need help. And so they come in based on kind of edge pushed in by somebody else. Mm-hmm. And then they kind of acknowledge it, particularly if they've been doing it for mm-hmm. a long time. They kind of acknowledge there's a struggle, but they were trying to, you know, veterans are very pride and mm-hmm. proudful. And they have a lot of pride. And so a lot of times they try to deal with it on their own and try to overcome it on their own. And it's when somebody else kind of says, you really need more help than what you're doing right now. Mm-hmm. And then they come in or right. call in.
I'm going to take a moment to remind our audience that this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Femuliner, and today we're talking about the military experience and the challenges that military members face as they return home. We're also playing portions of personal interviews with area military members done in partnership with StoryCorps' Military Voices Initiative and the U.S. or MU Extension Community Arts Project. Joining me in studio to explain the veteran experience, Eugene O'Loughlin works for the Missouri Veterans Commission as the Veterans Service Supervisor for Boone County, and Sean Martin is the acting team leader of the Columbia Vet Center. We'd also love to hear from you and our audience. If you're a veteran, what do you most value about your active duty experience? What skills did you learn? Share your thoughts. Give us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet intersectkbia. We'd like to remind you that you can watch Intersection as streaming video online during our live conversations every Monday afternoon at 2 at kbia.org. You can watch that video and join our online chat by going to kbia.org and scrolling down to the link for Intersection. Again, that's Mondays at 2 online at kbia.org. On the other side of that, we've talked a little bit about the veterans' role in this situation of trying to get into this, you know, society interaction levels where they want to be at in a healthy way. But what about civilians? What should they know about this challenge that veterans are chasing when they come back? And what can civilians do to try to ease that?
That's a rough one. I don't know. Yeah.
We partner with the Workforce Center. We have, you know, Eugene, we have one of your staff members in the Columbia Vet Center. And he does an excellent job, by the way. But then we also have the Workforce Center. And the Workforce Center is another state agency that I think it might receive some federal funds. But, you know, my understanding when we bring the Workforce Center involved in it, they help veterans find employment opportunities. But that's one part of their program. But another part of their program is they have employees that work with veterans to try to get them to hire more veterans. And so a lot of times when we have veterans that are seeking employment assistance, we connect them to the Workforce Center just so that they can get all the resources they're eligible for. And we usually have a pretty good satisfaction rate with the Workforce Center.
Sure. And yeah, that's a big deal, right? Normalizing back to society, having a job is going to be a big part of that. But what are some of the challenges there, Eugene? Is for veterans and trying to find their way back into the workforce?
I don't think it's limited to just veterans right now.
Yeah,
I think
sure.
civilians as well, you know, are having such a hard time finding good job opportunities. Along the same lines as the Career Center or the workforce development, there's also a workforce gentleman who works at the Veterans Hospital. And his job is actually to go out to different community businesses and say, hey, hire my veterans. You know, I got a couple guys that may fit the job requirements here, and, you know, maybe you can work with them. So to get back to your question from a little earlier about what can civilians do, mm-hmm. civilians as a person, I think you want to just try to be a little bit more understanding about what we think the veterans are going through over there. It's not all,
they can't necessarily understand, right?
No, yeah. And it's not what you see in TV or the movies. I mean, they glorify everything, but, you know, for people to just understand that these people have been through, these veterans have been through things that they don't understand and don't attempt to believe that you know what they went through just because you've seen a couple of Rambo movies. That doesn't really mm-hmm. cut it. And then for like employers, because that's definitely a major obstacle that these guys that are coming back today are having trouble with is obtaining and maintaining employment that provides for their family. And it takes a community, I love that saying. I mean, but it's very true. You need to work. Everybody needs to kind of work together in order to solve that problem.
Sure.
One thing we do at the Columbia Vet Center also is if a veteran who's come back from combat struggling with his employment situation, he can come into counseling just to kind of try to figure out how to deal with that stress. This isn't an uncommon issue, from Vietnam down, or probably well before that, that veterans struggled with employment when they came back because there's probably a multitude of issues in dealing with stresses. And in addition to dealing with stressors, there's also, in the military, there was a meaning, it was fighting for the country. Yeah. And they had a real strong purpose, a real strong meaning. And then they come back here and they look at their job and the meaning's absent. So,
right.
Yeah. So, yeah, what about that in workplace environment? I mean, what can employers, I guess, do too to make that something that's an easier fit, I guess? I mean, or I guess another way, what are some of the other challenges there aside from just that mission? I mean, it's a different structure and everything too, right?
Oh, it is. It has different accountability levels. There's different abilities. There's different levels of how people will be responsible and stuff. And in the military, there was always that accountability of everybody had a supervisor that you could go to if you had a problem. And there was always a solution at the end of the tunnel. In civilian life, you don't tend to see a lot of that either. You know, if you have a complaint about a specific problem or something, nobody really cares. And I think a little bit of that in the business side of it is kind of similar where, I'm paying you to do a job. Why should I have to coddle you and make sure that you're doing okay and that you're happy in your job too? You know, society today in the United States doesn't really care too much.
Another thing that goes hand in hand with this employment aspect is education. And that's especially important, I'd say, here where we were talking in Columbia on the campus of the University of Missouri. What are some of the challenges that veterans are facing as they come to college, as many of them are, right, especially from Iraq and Afghanistan?
My own personal opinion is I don't think that a lot of them are ready for sitting in a classroom with, 18 to 22-year-olds and who don't really have an understanding of what the real world is like. And when those veterans coming back from Iraq or Afghanistan are sitting in a class and they're all doing a discussion on something and there's a bunch of less mature students in the classroom that kind of haven't had it as rough as some of the veterans. I think the veterans kind of get a little angry about some of that. And
so they're just not ready for that new peer group, I guess, right?
No.
Yeah.
I think sometimes they struggle with they have anxiety, stressors. You know, a lot of veterans do not like to be in crowded situations. Obviously, universities can be very crowded. Parking, just coming here, it was crowded. And I have a big old long van, so I had to find a good parking spot. But the reality is there's – struggles that they have, and I've seen some vet students do very well, and I've seen some vet students have struggles. And I think the most important thing that a veteran going to college can do is get connected to a veterans group. Usually they're veterans who've all been in the same shared situation. They get with that group, and they can also get connected to different agencies on campus. There's the ADA offices. There's the director of personnel life, stuff like that. One of the things, I'm the acting team leader here in Columbia. I am from Manhattan, Kansas, and in Manhattan, Kansas, we do have a strong network connection to help veterans who are struggling. We even will help professors and train professors at Kansas State University. My hope is we can duplicate that here, and we can go to, I think there's two colleges, Columbia and the University of Missouri, mm-hmm. and my hope is that we can do some of that here with the training. and help students out who are in college who are struggling.
Eugene,
the University of Missouri actually has a vet center that their veterans group is over.
Great.
Last I heard, it's over 350 strong.
Right,
and they're very good. And actually, when I come across education questions, benefits questions that I can't answer, I refer them to the MU Vet Center. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because I'll refer people that are going to Moberly Area Community College or Columbia College or wherever it may be, and I tell them, just tell them I sent you over there to answer your questions. And they're wonderful over here.
And this may be obvious to you too, but why is that camaraderie and that sense of place, I guess, so important, especially for these students, these veterans, to have a place like that and have a group of people that understand where you're from?
I think it's a strong sense of connection. They feel connected. Yeah. They're not going to the university alone by themselves. They have friends. They have buddies that they're connected to. And the most important part is if they do get stressed or triggered, they may talk to their friend more than they talk to anyone else. And so, you know, they try to help out each other. In Kansas, you know, in Kansas State University, they do have a vet center on Kansas campus too, on a Kansas State campus. And we are connected to them. And we're going to look at trying to send out a counselor there to meet veterans on campus. I'd like to see us do that here.
Yeah. We have service officers. The Missouri Veterans Commission has 47 service officers in the state, and several of them actually go to some of the major campuses around. The biggest reason why we don't go to like Mizzou or Columbia is the strength of the vet center over here. Not the VA vet center, but this is the MU.
You're talking about the MU vet center.
It's a veterans group.
And sure.
Part of the admissions department here.
And it's, I've seen it at Kansas State where they didn't have a vet center group. And then I saw it when they formed one, and the students responded a lot better that way.
Well, it's very difficult for a veteran coming back from Iraq or Afghanistan who has seen combat, you know, to make that connection with other people. And yet if they go to school and they find that there's already a small group of people, even if it is, you know, 300 people strong, that's still a relatively small group when you're talking there are, what, 25,000-30,000 students that go to Mizzou.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice for them to make that association with those other people.
Yeah. Have you heard anything about whether professors are in the right
place where they need to be?
Yeah.
There are professors, veteran professors that are also part of the vet center as well.
But what about just your common professor? Do you think that have you heard whether they're equipped to handle some of the issues that veterans are coming with or just the...
I do not know. I have not heard.
Oh, okay. Well, actually, it's a good time to remind our listeners very quickly. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Fumuliner, and today we're talking about the military experience and the challenges that military members face as they return home. We're also playing portions of personal interviews with area military members done in partnership with StoryCorps' Military Voices Initiative and the MU Extension Community Arts Project. Joining me in studio to explain the veteran experience, Eugene O'Loughlin works for the Missouri Veterans Commission as the Veterans Service Supervisor for Boone County, and Sean Martin is the acting team leader of the Columbia Vet Center. We'd also love to hear from you and our audience. Are there any popular misconceptions about veterans that you know of? Share your thoughts. Give us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet @KBIA. Now we're going to go ahead and play another one of those pieces we've been airing on KBIA's special series of Military Voices. After 12 years of service in the U.S. Navy and military, Kendale Carter received a medical discharge for his PTSD symptoms. When he arrived home, he struggled with his condition while also coping with the death of his younger brother, who died of a brain tumor, and the separation from his first wife. Kendale came to StoryCorps with longtime family friend Jenny Grieve to talk about his struggles and what it took for him to persevere.
What was the most difficult thing to adjust to after coming home?
Adjusting back to marriage life would probably be my hardest one, which in turn turned into a divorce. You know, you spend 10 months in a country that's nothing like the United States and deal with rocket attacks sometimes on a daily basis, and then you come back and the house that you left has molded into a new home where they've handled everything on their own without you. It took a toll on both sides as far as realizing it's just going to take time. And I think my hardest adjustment was realizing that I maybe needed to kind of pump the brakes and realize that everything's not going to just go right back to the way it was.
When was your final separation from the military?
January of this year, of 2013.
Can you tell me a little bit why you separated?
It was a medical separation due to my PTSD and anxiety and I guess fears of being around my weapon and things like that. So I was closed off for a while, and so I really didn't let people in to kind of help me.
I had tried to break the wall. Once the wall was broken down, it was a little bit easier.
Like I said, you could relate to me. You knew some of the pains that I was going through, and people need to have a little bit more understanding and patience to understand what combat-related PTSD really means.
That was Navy veteran Kendale Carter, who lives in Columbia, and his friend Jenny Greaves talking about Kendale's experiences and hardships during and after his military career. That story was produced by Andrew Yost for KBIA. On that issue about PTSD and the public's perceptions of it, what does the public not know about PTSD right now? And what are they understanding incorrectly, I guess?
You know, I don't know if I actually look at it from that angle. What I look at it is when a veteran comes into our facility, what we try to do is help them manage one symptom at a time. Mm-hmm. And PTSD is about symptoms. There's 17 symptoms that we look at that falls into three clusters, if you want to say. And out of those 17 symptoms, we just ask, can we help ease one symptom at a time? And I think the population at large thinks if somebody has PTSD, they may have PTSD for life. But when we reduce a symptom at a time and they manage their symptoms, the experiences are going to be there. It's how they manage the symptoms. We find a lot of veterans can manage those symptoms a lot better and can reduce the pain that they're going through just by learning new coping strategies and coping skills.
Yeah, and that was what we heard in that first piece, Sean Lee, earlier in the show, too. We heard him talking about people thinking, well, that person is going to have PTSD when they come back, and we can't let people know who you are because that might, sure. You know, is that kind of stigma, I guess, comes along with it, too, in some ways.
Yeah.
Well, if you just heard that the gentleman just talking right now, his good friend who related to him well helped break the wall down. Mm-hmm. And so he was able to share and become more open and more vulnerable with that person. You know, if again, that does help a vet. Any strong support base has been proven to be beneficial mm-hmm. for a vet overcoming PTSD symptoms. And that's a great case example where that works. And that's what we try to do at the Vet Center as well.
Mm-hmm. I think that there's a misconception, too, with PTSD that it's not always caused by combat. I mean, you can get PTSD from any what you consider to be a life-threatening situation. It's just that with the military right now, the veterans are having to go and serve for, I mean, if you're active duty, you could be over there for three or four or five tours, you know, and that's a lot of stress to undergo. You know, these people are going 100 miles an hour. Their adrenaline level is pumping 24 hours a day for 12 months, 15 months, 18 months at a time. And then they come home, you know, and it's expected to just shut off. And that's impossible. You know, we have back here in the United States, we have a flight or fight type of mentality, but they're living that 24 hours a day, and so it's hard to shut that off. And I think that's one of the reasons why they have so much anxiety mm-hmm. when they come back, is because they can't just turn that off.
We have to take a quick break. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today, we're talking about the military experience and the challenges military members face as they return home. Joining me in studio to explain the veteran experience are Eugene O'Loughlin, who works for the Missouri Veterans Commission as the Veteran Service Supervisor for Boone County, and Sean Martin, who's the acting team leader of the Columbia Vet Center. I'm Ryan from Mueller. We'll be right back after a short break. Welcome back to Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Femuliner, and today we're talking about the military experience and the challenges that military members face as they return home. We're also playing portions of personal interviews with area military members done in partnership with StoryCorps' Military Voices Initiative and the MU Extension Community Arts Project. Joining me in studio to explain the veteran experience, Eugene O'Loughlin works for the Missouri Veterans Commission as the Veterans Service Supervisor for Boone County, and Sean Martin is the acting team leader of the Columbia Vets Center. And for you and our audience, do you have a relative in the military? Is that challenging at times? Share your thoughts. Give us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet intersectkbia. One of the pieces of research I wanted to bring in, we were talking about PTSD and public's perceptions before the break. In 2012, a poll by the Greenberg Quinlan Rosner Research Organization found that over half of the respondents believed that the majority of post-9/11 vets suffered from PTSD. So more often than not, someone coming back from the military suffers from PTSD. But most experts actually place that figure around 20%, so much lower. So why do civilians overestimate that incidence of PTSD? Do you have any idea? Is that a problem too, I suppose?
Anything you don't understand, I think, is a problem. I think that the biggest misconception of why that is so high is the fact that most people think that everybody is fighting in combat when it's only a small percentage of the population in the military that it's actually in combat. The majority of the forces are actually support forces, you know, further back from the front lines type of a mentality. But also, I think a lot of it has to do with the way that Hollywood has glorified being in the military. You know, everybody's the fighter pilot. Everybody is the special forces, the Navy SEAL, the person out there, you know, doing all this miraculous stuff. And, you know, it's a lot harder to be that common guy that's just going out on patrol night after night after night.
Yeah, well, and there's like a phenomenon that I think some of the articles I've read before the show talking about hero worship, right? Is that, that's another thing people deal with when they're coming back, right?
Yeah.
And we'll explain that a little bit if you don't mind.
I haven't heard the term hero worship. Have you heard the term?
No,
hero
worship? Well, basically the perception that that people in the general public see, you know, Rambo or something like that coming back. Okay. And so it's kind of this high standard to live up to, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, yeah. I think we use different language.
It's a terminology.
Yeah.
Sure. What's the terminology you use, just for curiosity?
I don't know if there really is a term that we actually use with it. It's just kind of that whole, you know, glorification of the soldier, thinking that there's, you know, that everybody is that way, and that's so untrue.
I think a lot of the veterans that we work with, there's a lot of veterans that think, well, their service wasn't as significant as somebody else's service. And so, for example, you have veterans that are in the combat zone. And when they are in the combat zone, they may not be doing direct hand combat. But yet, it's just as traumatic for them because I heard one of the stories, rockets were coming in daily. So he may not have fired at anyone or been fired by, but yet he was, you know, I've heard lots of stories where rockets hit their compound or their camp daily and mortars and IEDs and what have you, you know, convoys, you know. Mm-hmm. This war has shown a lot of the IEDs, the vehicle IEDs as well, and the V-bits. And they're just moving from point A to point B, moving stock, moving food, moving, you know, whatever they need to move, and they're getting hit. And so, you know, the reality is the wars change all the time. And I think you're seeing in these wars here that being in that, just being in the combat zone, in the combat area, is very traumatic and very overwhelming. And anytime that happens, veterans that come into our facility say, well, I wasn't as bad off as somebody else. Somebody lost their arm or somebody lost their leg or somebody died over this. And I didn't die. I lived. And so we call it, their pride. And so, I go back to veterans are very proud. They do their job. They do their job very well. Mm-hmm. But when they're seeking help, they think, well, maybe I don't deserve this.
Right. So that's one of the things I often hear, too, about, like, group counseling centers and services that they have. My PTSD isn't really, you know, based on combat because I didn't serve in combat and I really don't feel like going into a Vietnam veterans group or a OEF, OIF group, you know. you know, it's almost like a survivor's guilt, you know, that everybody, that this guy had it worse than me, so I don't want to compare my service to his because I, you know, I didn't do anything in comparison to what he did, you know. So that's definitely an obstacle that, you know, your average veteran needs to overcome because, you know, without them reaching out and saying, you know what, I need help, they're not going to get any help.
And again, to bring it back to the civilian perspective, you know, I get some of these things I've read talking about how everyone is so quick to thank people for their service, which is not necessarily a bad thing. But again, that kind of feeds this, I guess, idea of you were such a hero. And when sometimes what you're saying here is it sounds like people don't necessarily feel like a hero.
Right. I think very few feel that they've ever done anything worthwhile when they were in the service. You know, and that mentality of I did what I had to do to survive, you know, that's the epitome of the anti-hero, you know. Again, the glorification that Hollywood has thrown into us with Rambo and all the those type of movies. I think you'll find something, the documentaries that you see on war. You know, those are a lot more fitting. Those, the first 20 minutes of Saving Private Ryan, that's war. You know, I mean, there's no heroes to it. There's just people that did what they had to do to survive.
Yeah, I think what you see with the veterans is they did their job. That's what they tell. Yeah. Like, I did my job. You know, would you not expect me not to do my job? So their expectations, they did their job, and that's it. Where, you know, a lot of maybe what you're talking about in those articles, even though I haven't read them, the Hero of Pride, them maybe thinking that they're heroes where they think they just did their job and they did it well.
Sure, sure. Yeah, actually, I have an excerpt here I'll read very quickly from a New Yorker article that was talking about lionizing all veterans, referring to anyone who's ever worn the uniform as a hero. This cultural tic is rooted in the politics of our time, but on a personal level, it has had the effect of short-circuiting a more open and mature dialogue between veterans and non-veterans. This failed conversation makes veterans feel even more alienated from society and in some cases can actually exasperate their PTSD. And the simple fact is that witnessing killing and destruction doesn't make you feel like a hero. It's around these questions of moral pollution and loss that one feels the gulf between veteran and civilian at its widest. So, yeah, is that similar to, I mean, the challenge you're talking about here, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, these guys, they're trying to move on, veterans that are returning back. You know, they're just trying to move on and get it to the next step. And there are a lot of obstacles set up, whether those were set up by society or by themselves. They have to overcome obstacles that, you know, the average high school graduate that's going right off to college doesn't have a clue about.
Sure.
You know, so.
And a lot of these vets work very hard at trying to reduce the memories, the images, the thoughts that keep flashing back in their memories, in their minds. And they try real hard to do that. Sometimes it's through self-medication. Sometimes it's through therapy. Sometimes it's just trying to work it on their own. But the reality is if it keeps coming back up to them, it doesn't make it better for them.
Right. I actually wanted to go ahead and bring in, because we have a couple other pieces we want to play today. So I was going to bring in another one of those recorded pieces that we had mentioned earlier. It's part of KBIA's special series of Military Voices. 5-year-old Kylie Jornell's father is in Japan with the Navy, and she lives with her grandmother, Maria Oropello, in Colombia, who cares for her as a mother. They came to StoryCorps to talk about their family history and how the military has impacted it.
My name is Maria Oropello. I am 57 years old, and I am here with my daughter/granddaughter, Kylie Jornell. Would you like to introduce yourself?
I'm Kylie Jornell.
How old are you, Kylie?
5 years old.
I have some pictures I'd like to show you. Who is this?
Amy.
And who is Amy?
My mom.
Amy is your mom, and she was my
daughter.
That's right. Can I show you some other pictures? Who is this?
Amy and my dad.
Yeah, and your dad was about to go on deployment again. That means he was going to be away for 8 months. And
wow,
mommy was
8 months.
Yeah. And mommy was pregnant with you. She was 6 months pregnant there.
Wow.
Well, the next day, your daddy left on his tour with the Navy. But then what happened to Amy was she got sick, didn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah. And what did we have to do? Took her to the hospital?
Yeah.
And who was born that day?
Me.
And what else happened that day?
Amy died.
Amy died. Yeah. Everybody was very happy and very sad at the same time. Your daddy was there. He was there when you were born.
I know.
I'm showing you pictures now of when you were in the NICU. You were born in September.
And there's me laying down.
That's the picture. You were 3 weeks old, and that was the first time Daddy held you. Look how tiny you were.
That really does look just tiny.
And there were pipes and tubes coming out of you. And Daddy, who was supposed to be on his ship, the Navy said, your job is to stay with your daughter. And so Daddy stayed 4.5 months. In January, the doctor said, oh, look, Kylie is well enough to go home. And you came home with me. Where's Daddy now?
In the Navy.
He's in the Navy still, isn't he? And yeah. Where is he working?
He's working in Japan.
Japan? That's far away, isn't it?
Yeah, but at least you're taking care of me.
The Navy has been great. We can't say enough good things about what they did for him. They are always asking for updates on how she's doing. At first, he found it a little bit intrusive, I think. But then we both realized that this was their way of saying they understood his need to be a parent here in the States, a distant, long-distant parent. And that's how it is. He's her father. He gives us control over her well-being because we see her and we're with her every day. But he's still her dad, and that's...
That was 5-year-old Kylie Jornell talking with her grandmother, Maria Oropello, who she lives with in Colombia. The story was produced by Kate Grumke for KBIA. So obviously a very unique story, but at the same time, maybe a good foray here in talking about families, right? We haven't talked a whole lot about families and how military service impacts them. Again, this was a very unique circumstance, but maybe let's talk a little bit about the challenges for military families, and especially with deployments.
I mean, active duty, you know that that's always a possibility. And going back to the last gentleman who spoke, I'm drawing a blank on his name
Kendale. Kendale Carter, yeah.
Kendall. He had mentioned how in going away and then when he came back, he had trouble connecting back up with his wife and stuff. And, you know, she had been running the house for the past year, 8 months, whatever it was that he was gone. And then when he returned, it's like he comes back and expects, well, I'm just going to pick up the reins where I left them, you know. But yet she's been running this place the spouse, I should say, mm-hmm. has been running the house now for 8 months. And it's, it's not possible for that spouse to just let go of the reins and turn everything back over to the veteran. Mm-hmm. In a similar situation here, you have, a child that's left with grandparents because the spouse is no longer with us. And, you know, it's definitely a difficult scenario mm-hmm. as we see it.
Yeah, the roles just have to change, right,
yeah.
for things to keep moving on.
And you have to be more cooperative, and you have to, it's definitely more of an understanding of, we have to work together.
Yeah, at the Vet Center, we work with families. We're allowed to work with the family members. There's adjustment problems when a veteran may go off to combat. There's adjustment problems when the veteran comes back. And it's adjustment not only for it's for the whole family. It could be children. It could be spouses. It could be significant others. And then in addition to that, some of them are in reserves. Some are in National Guard. And some are in the actual active duty services. And so they're all faced different adjustments coming back. Some come back and have the full-time job. Some of them come back and looking for employment. Some come back and you know, they had a lot of income when they were deployed, but now their income's a lot less now. And so there's a lot of different issues that can occur. Just even the routines, the daily routines, who's, you know, sometimes they come back, and if it's a guy who's deployed, the oldest son might have been the head of the household. Now mm-hmm. he's delegated back to being, you're the son, yes. not the head of the household. And so sometimes you leave a year later, wow, a year makes a difference in, you know, if they're 13 to 14 or something like that.
Yeah. And then the Missouri National Guard, when a guardsman is deployed, there's a lot of resources for the yes. family members that are staying back here, mm-hmm. which is good to see. And then when the guardsmen do come back, that's when you have those yellow ribbon events that we talked about earlier, where it's just a group of it's a way of getting the drilling guardsmen access to a lot of the different resources and benefits that are out there. Mm-hmm. They bring us in and we give presentations on what benefits are available to them and stuff like that. So guardsmen and reservists have it a little bit easier when it comes to reintegrating and stuff, because they hit them pretty hard with those benefits briefings. So in hearing her speak, I think one of the things that you know, really hits home is how much the military has changed, because even 20 years ago, you didn't have that family life. Your family was just an extension of the veteran or the active duty service member, you know, and the military didn't really have much to do with them. And I think now they're starting to see that, you know, if they want to keep people in the military that are good, worthwhile people to keep in the military, they have to deal with their parent, with their family as well.
Right. So. And again, it's such a unique circumstance in the story we just heard. Yeah.
But stories like that do happen. You know, I've seen veterans who've been deployed and things happen to their family members and they're sent back home to deal with the emergencies. So it does happen. It probably happens more often than the public might mm-hmm. realize.
Do you have any idea, I'm not asking you to speculate necessarily, but do you have any idea of why that change might be occurring? Any other examples, I guess, as far as, you know, seeing an emphasis on families and why that's important?
I think it has a little bit to do, or at least the first thing that's popping in my mind is the fact that, you know, we don't have a draft anymore. It's a volunteer service. Mm-hmm. And in order to get people to actually stay in the military, they've got to be more understanding. You know, people are going in there. I had a guy that served for 17 years in the military. After 20 years, you get a retirement. After 17 years, he called it quits. He said, that was it. I ETS'd. I completed my contract, and I got out. And I said, why? I said, you know, if you had just reenlisted for, you know, one more time or going to the reserves or something, you can get some kind of a retirement. And he said, I spent the past 5 out of the past 6 years in Iraq and Afghanistan. He goes, I can't do it anymore. I just cannot do it anymore. And I think that that's one of the problems that the military is facing right now, is that all the longevity people, you know, you don't have as many as you did previously because of that scenario. They've got to be more understanding to the families. And, you know, they've got to look at a lot of the extraneous situations that are going on in life.
I'll take a moment to remind our audience that this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Femuelner, and today we're talking about the military experience and the challenges that military members face as they return home. We're also playing portions of personal interviews with area military members done in partnership with StoryCorps' Military Voices Initiative and the MU Extension Community Arts Project. Joining me in studio to explain the veteran experience, Eugene O'Loughlin works for the Missouri Veterans Commission as the Veterans Service Supervisor for Boone County, and Sean Martin is the acting team leader of the Columbia Vet Center. For you in our audience, are you a veteran who's returning to school? How's it gone? Share your thoughts. Give us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet intersect@kbia. I guess one other question out of all this, too, is, you know, you're talking about the fact that this generation of soldiers may be treated a slightly different way. How do you think that these soldiers are, and I guess the fact that it's also a volunteer service now, as opposed to, as you mentioned, there's draft. We still have a lot of people around that were drafted. How do you think these generations of returning veterans compare, I guess? Are there any similarities or differences you see?
I think one of the biggest things that we see as a difference right now is that during Vietnam 35 years ago, people were against the war and they were against the people that fought in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, those people are now 60 to 75 years old, and they understand that you can still disagree with, you know, being in Iraq or Afghanistan, but you still want to support the troops. So there's a difference there that wasn't there 35 years ago, you know.
Mm-hmm. So how does that impact, I guess, the people coming back? You know what I mean? Like, what does that mean for the individual veteran?
Professionally, what I see is communities respond differently to veterans now than they did in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. In Vietnam, they were shunned. You know, mm-hmm. Counseling sessions after counseling sessions where, you know, they had to hide from their service. They couldn't tell people they were in the military, mm-hmm. or else they wouldn't even get employed. Even if they had friends, you know, their father's friend had a position open, they still had to hide that they were in the military. So I think our society in large has produced programs that they know are beneficial because they didn't, you know, for the Vietnam vets, they didn't have it. Mm-hmm. And they looked at what could have made the Vietnam veteran experience better when they returned home. Everything that they thought could have made it better, they're now doing now, mm-hmm. for the veterans here. So they're benefiting off what the Vietnam veterans didn't receive when they came back. Mm-hmm. And when you talk to the Vietnam veterans, they're pretty, you know, they're very, they have a lot of pride too, and they're pretty, at least they're pretty happy that the veterans now are getting treated better than they were treated.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting too, because I know I've reported on this at different places across the country where some VFW hall leaders are now saying that some of these younger veterans from Iraq, Afghanistan aren't really taking part in that. I mean, it seems like maybe that was one of those places that Vietnam veterans especially, and we're able to find that now we've got more of a systematic thing in place, right? Yeah.
Service organizations as a whole, the VFW, American Legion and stuff, they've had a rough time acclimating to the younger generation of veterans that are coming back. And part of the difference there was that in World War II and in Korea, when you went to war, you went as a unit, you came back as a unit. Yes. Nowadays, it's a lot more of the, you know, in Vietnam, it all was individuals that mm-hmm. were getting sent over there. They were stationed there for 12 months and then they were brought back. It's we're heading back a little bit into that with OIF and OAEF. Mm-hmm. But as people are coming back and they're going to those VFW and American Legion meetings and stuff, they're not really being engaged as I think that they think they ought to be. But at the same time, a lot of those groups, there's such an age difference that it's hard for them to make that connection. Do you see that,
John? Well, no, I wasn't aware of that article that you just referenced. But I would say that the veterans I've been providing counseling services to, the Vietnam veterans, they shared the same concern when they came back that they weren't acclimating to the service organizations as well. And again, your experience, everyone went over together and came back together, yeah. until Vietnam. And Vietnam, when they came back, they were kind of not, you know, a lot of Vietnam veterans have said they weren't even welcomed into the service organizations.
That's true. I've heard the same thing.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of Vietnam veterans tell me that. And so I think it just could be, you know, when you get into different genres, different age groups and stuff like that. And our society, you know, I'm speculating, but our society has changed as a whole also. I remember as a kid when I grew up, you had three channels, TV went off by 10 o'clock or whatever. Now, you know, what happened? Now we got all these channels all night long, and I use smartphones, and you can do anything on a smartphone that you needed a computer for. So I think times have changed too.
Sure.
So
I want to go ahead and play. We just have a few minutes left in the show, but one more clip that we've been airing on KBIA from this special series of Military Voices. Levi Newman grew up in Stella, Missouri, a small town near Joplin of less than 200 people. 10 days after finishing up high school, Newman decided to join the Army. His life in the service changed significantly when the 9/11 attacks occurred, and now, after 10 years in the military, Newman graduated from the University of Missouri. He's currently a senior author and director of outreach at Veterans United in Columbia, where he writes stories or opinion pieces and reaches out to the community. Newman talked with his coworker, Jeff Owsley.
Do you feel like there's a limit to how much you still want to be connected to the military world?
Yes. And without sounding like a jerk, you know, like sure. When I left the Army, I was like, I'm done with the Army. This mm-hmm. is it. I want nothing else to do with it. I'm tired. I just want to be Levi. Nobody said my name for a decade. I want to be Levi for a while. And it's difficult to be in an environment where you weren't expecting to be. You know, I expected to be done with that. And so now I have a job where that's what I do. Mm-hmm. I told somebody the other day that I don't want to be a veteran that writes. I want to be a writer that happens to be a veteran. I'm very, you know, I have a lot of pride in being a veteran, and I earned it every day. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's who I am. I mean, that's not only mm-hmm. who I am.
Sure.
That was Army veteran Levi Newman, who visited the KBIA studios in September with his coworker Jeff Owsley. Tony Nochin produced that story for KBIA. Any thoughts on Levi's approach to his adjustment, I guess? Is that, because we talked a lot about someone who wants to still – people who want to still identify with their maybe being a veteran. This is maybe somebody who's saying, you know, I'm ready to just be a regular civilian again.
I think everybody – I mean, even somebody who served like myself, served during peacetime, you want to come home and you want to just be that civilian. You want to just be that kid again. But it changes you. I think it's kind of impossible to go back and be just Levi again. It's because it becomes part of you. You're broken down in the military, and you're built back up to be somebody different, somebody that can take on more.
I think you have a lot more wisdom in the military. Yeah. You face challenges you never would face if you didn't go into the military, and you come back, and instead of watching the sports or whatever, you're watching the world news and stuff like that, and you become, you know, you become different. I've heard a lot of veterans. I'm one. Myself, that I thought when I'm done with the military, great, I'm done. And next thing you know, you're right back working with the military, and you appreciate it, you love it.
Right. So.
Which Levi was doing as well.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
I guess, Sean, we just have a few seconds left, but we've talked a lot about the Vet Center today. Maybe just if you people want to know more about that, what should they do?
Sure. They can call the Vet Center. Again, it's 573-814-6206. That's the Vet Center phone number. I haven't memorized. And what we do is we provide readjustment counseling services to veterans who've been in combat, veterans who've been sexually traumatized on active duty service. And we provide it to not only the veterans but their family members. We also do bereavement counseling. If anyone dies on active duty status, regardless if they've been in war or not, it could be stateside, we will provide counseling to those family members also. And everything we do is free of charge. We also connect veterans with different resources in the community.
Okay. Well, that's all the time we have for today's Intersection. Thanks very much to our guest, Eugene O'Loughlin, who works for the Missouri Veterans Commission as the Veterans Service Supervisor for Boone County, and Sean Martin, who's the acting team leader of the Columbia Vet Center. We'd like to remind those of you enjoying this as a rebroadcast that Intersection takes place live for a full hour from 2 to 3 every Monday afternoon. You can watch live streaming video of our program each Monday afternoon online at kbia.org. Alongside that video, you can submit your questions and comments and take part in an online discussion with others in the audience. You'll also find an archive of all of our past programs, including the full hour of today's conversation. Intersection is a broadcast from the Reynolds Journalism Institute and is a project of RJI and KBIA. Intersection is produced by Raymond Tungekar, Janet Saidi, and Ruben Stern. Travis McMillan is our technical director with production assistance from Caleb Hoke, Casey Morell, and Andrew Yost. Pat Akers is our audio producer. Executive directors are Mike Dunn and Mike McKean, and I'm Ryan Femuliner. Thanks for joining us today, and have a great week. We'll